We are now in Paragimel. Pasuk Yud Aleph, we're dealing with Yehoshaphat going up with the king of Israel. The king of Israel at the time was Yehoram, the son of Ahab. Now remember, Yehoram ben Ahab was at least a little bit better than Ahab. He had destroyed most of the Asherah trees. He had destroyed most of the Avodah Zarah. He did keep the Eagle Azov up and gone, the Eagle Azov down in Beersheba, but that was because he thought it was an emissary of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They really did think that those things were part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he kept around he got rid of the Baal and the Asherahs, right? The Asherah, which was a female counterpart of the Baal, he kept those around because of his mother.
That's kind of weird that he thought that the Eagle was emissary of God. Well, first of all, why is it always an Eagle? It must have been some sort of a word.
The Ramban, famous Ramban in parts of
Shishisa. Sure, not an Eagle.
Well, it was something that was like the shore.
By the time it got to him, the story had changed and was believed so that they thought that they were actually emissaries.
It's been 150 years.
What is the
and they did know Yerubim and Avodah as being a tremendous Talmud Chacham. I'm sure the people around there in Bnei Yisrael did not think of anything different. But it's there. What was the Asherah tree? Some type of female counterpart type of Avodah Zarah.
Oh, we don't know what
tree
is
there. No, I don't know. It could be any tree. The tree didn't matter. The tree didn't matter.
Using the Avodah Zarah to track down what possibilities are.
Yeah, not that
cheeky.
But either way, regardless, it says in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Yehoshaphat said, is there no other Navi of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Nidrashas Hashem Meoso that we can ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we can ask through God of him about this war? Because remember, what they ended up doing was they wanted to fight against Ammon, right? They wanted to go up against them, but they took the long route. They went, instead of across the Jordan River, which they were expecting, they wanted to go through the south and go through the desert in order to get up there. The problem with going through the desert is you were going through a desert with a massive army. So they met up with Edom, and they got Edom right around there. It was problematic because you're going right around that area. It says, "Vayan echad me'avdi melech Yisrael v'yomer po Elisha ben Shaphat asher yotzek ma'im ayidei Eliyahu." So one of the servants of the king of Israel said, "Listen, here was Elisha ben Shaphat. He poured water on the hands of Eliyahu Anavi," meaning he was highly involved with Eliyahu Anavi. And Elisha is a great Navi. We should ask him that question. Now, number one, we see that Elisha was not chosen because of his greatness of what he did when it came to Nevuah. Elisha was chosen because, simply put, he was Meshamish Talmidei Chachamim. He was a Shamish of Eliyahu Hanavi, and that's what he ended up doing over here. It wasn't because of anything else that he did. He was a Shamish. He poured out and he did stuff like that. Some say that it was also referring to the miracle on Har Carmel. Eliyahu Hanavi, remember, asked to pour water. The pourer of water that did all those crazy miracles was Elisha, so they were remembering that now. Yes.
Yeah, there's something to be said for a person being able to be Yatzak Maimah Yidei Eliyahu. No, you're not a slouch if you do that.
Exactly. He's got to be the best of the generation to be able to be that way. There's no question.
Yeah,
that's what he's saying.
But
simply put, he's the first to throw water on Eliyahu Navi's hands, and that's in and of itself awesome.
But Eliezer of Abram was...
You're correct. And so too, Gehazi by Elisha was a little bit off. So you do have that. But nonetheless, they knew Eliyahu Navi, and they probably knew Elisha as well. They might not have known him as a Navi, but they did know him as a great man. So Vayomri Yehoshaphat...
Here's the question.
What are they going to ask? They're going to ask, what do we do now? It's been 7 days. We have no water. We have no food left. We were expecting to fight them. Our people are not ready to fight. What should we do? If we go back, we're going to die because we don't have enough food to go through the desert again. If we go forward, we're going to meet up with Ammon. We're going to all be dying in the hands of Ammon. So what can we do? So Yehoshaphat said, I know there's a word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu within. The kings, all three of them, they went down to him. They approached him humbly. And that's clear. Even though it says Melech Yisrael first, even though Yehoshaphat was clearly older, Yehoshaphat was humbling himself, machnia himself, and saying, I'm not as great. I don't want to...
The only one that was named also by name, too.
Uh-huh, that's true also. The Melech Adam doesn't matter. But Yomar Elisha al Melech Yisrael, the king. Elisha said to the king of Israel, Mali v'loch, right? Lech el nevi'ech, el nevi'ech avich, right? Avichav, el nevi'ech mecha. What do I have to do with you? He said to Yehoram ben Achav. This is Elisha saying to Yehoram ben Achav. What do I have to do with you? He said to him. Go to the prophets that your mom and your dad had. Go to those people. Yomar el Melech Yisrael, and the king of Israel said, don't. We're now in trouble. We've got three kings in the hands of Moab. Please, don't do this. Don't be sarcastic. Don't be joking around. We're serious right now. What are we supposed to do over here? And that's the idea behind it. So the Medrash says the following. The Yehoram looked up at Eliyahu Hanavi and said, please, don't refuse me in a time of need. I understand. He looked up at Elisha. I'm sorry, yeah. He looked at Elisha, and Elisha started rebuking. He said, listen, I've done what I can. Granted, I could do a little little bit more, but I'm not like my father. I'm not like my mother. I've gotten rid of the Avodah Zarah of the land. And, you know, I might not have done exactly what I'm supposed to do, but definitely I've done a lot of things over here, right? Never did I deny that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the God of the universe, and nor did my father ever deny that. That's something that we're always there. And Elisha said that he should have gone to HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly. You shouldn't have come to me. You should have dove into HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly. But either way, Pasuk Yudalev, Yomer Elisha Chai Shem Tzva goes by the life of Hashem, our God, Shamani Lufanov, that I stand in front of. If not for the king of Yoshaphat, the king Yoshaphat, king of Yehuda over here, right, I would not even look at you, or I would see you. I wouldn't go anywhere near you. That's what he said to Yoram ben Achav. Unbelievable, isn't it? And it seems strange because Eliyahu HaNavi was with Achav, who was a true Rasha. It seems that Yoram wasn't a terrible guy. It seems that he didn't do things that were absolutely terrible. But Achav still was bad. He still was worshipping a Avodah Zarah right and left. Yehoram, it doesn't seem like he did that.
Wasn't originally bad, right? His devil was bad. It turned out.
It's not true. Achav was always bad.
No, but I thought Achav initially had
we spoke a lot about this. No, Achav was bad. There's no way. He has no chelik in Olam Haba. You can't blame that on Izebel. Izebel has a chelik in Olam Haba. She's not in the list.
Really? The list only includes
men. Yeah. That's right. It could be. But Izebel's not in the list. I guess maybe they're connected.
All women don't have a chelik in Olam Haba.
Yeah, that's what he's trying to say. That's better.
Difference just in education wise. He's like trying to do better, so he's kind of pushing him to do better.
I hear that. So that's even more of a reason.
Achav, who like
didn't have a chance
to
turn place.
Yell at him, not getting anywhere.
Very, very good. Look at Pasuk Tetzvav. That's all. Says Elisha now, Kehuli Menagin, get me a singer or a player, a harp player, right? You cannot get a Menagin at the Yerlov Yad Hashem. As the musician played, he received the Yad of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We learn from over here that a Navi cannot just get Nevuah. One of the prerequisites is you have to be Besimcha. In order to do Simcha, they always had music playing for them to be able to have that thing around, so it was there. So Elisha was upset right now. He was angry that Yoram ben Achav came to him after so many years, after whatever it was. He felt that he was ignored by Yehoram. Now suddenly he comes to him. He was upset enough that he couldn't receive an Nevuah, and now he was able to. Yomer, Kol Amar Hashem, so says God. Asoha Nakal Azeh gave him. This river, make this river into many different wells. That's what it says. Ki Kol Amar Hashem, losiru ruach, losiru gashem. You will not see any wind, you will not see any rain. And nonetheless, this river, the Wadi, is going to fill up with water. You and your cattle and your animals will all drink. Now, it won't make any sense. I mean, it'll be as if it's appearing that water is coming from the ground. It's literally come out from the ground.
Valley, right?
Nahal is really a Wadi. A Wadi is a dried up river bed. That's really what a Nahal is. Nahal can be like Nahal Kishon, Nahal Sorek, like you see Nahal Kidron. Usually that's how they translate it. Now, Anachol can't, it was a place where there was a river. There's no question there's still a riverbed around there. Sometimes it probably filled up with water, like in the winter when everything melted and it was around there. This time, this is what he's saying, you won't see the rain coming down. You're not going to see any wind that's blowing it in there. Somehow the river, the Wadi, is going to just fill up and you'll have enough to drink. This is easy. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu's eyes. And also that's Moab, and then Moab will be given over to your hands. I said Amon before, my bad. The Kisim Kol Ir Mitzor, you will knock down every fortified city, as well as every choice city, Bachar is the word, and all the good trees you will knock them down. You're going to close up all their springs of water, and all their good fields you're going to afflict with stones. Now that's,
why is God doing this?
A little bit strange, right? Why was that completely necessary over here? Here's the idea. Number one, this is the fourth miracle of Elisha. I forgot to mention that. This is the fourth miracle that we have so far. It was comparable to what he did on the Mount Har Carmel, that by Har Carmel he made the water fill up the whole way through. Here also he did the exact same thing. There was going to be another miracle, though, and that miracle was the effortless victory, where they were going to win without trying whatsoever. And that's the idea. It says over here that they had a special mitzvah of completely destroying destroying Moab as if they were one of the seven nations of Eretz Canaan. Just like in Eretz Canaan, it's got to be that you knock down the trees. Normally, the trees are low sikros kolates. You're not allowed to cut down the trees. Nonetheless, there are certain times where you have to destroy the city, destroy the trees, and everything like that. So this nation of Moab, because they had fought, I think it was more because they were fighting again and again and again against Klal Yisrael, and that's the reason why they had come about it, and that's the idea. Literally destroy the entire land. That's all it is. Destroy everything about them. So it wasn't Pasuk Chaf. It says it was in the morning. As the offering was being brought, there was water that came from the way of Edom. The land was filled with this water. It made no sense, but that's the time that everything came inside. It is weird, the word mincha, because mincha normally does not mean in the morning. Mincha normally means in the afternoon. That's the normal korban that you bring in the afternoon of any time. Nonetheless, this is referring to the morning. It refers to what happened early in the morning, and it's strange, isn't it? Elisha gave the nevuah, and it didn't happen immediately. Remember, all Nevi'im only prophesied during the day, not at night. So when they were sitting there, unbelievably thirsty, and they didn't have any water, Kadosh Baruch Hu said, your suffering isn't done yet. You're still going to suffer through the night, and then only in the morning, after the korban is brought, that's when you guys are going to be able to drink something. Shows that they must have deserved a lot of a punishment over here. Chabalos, the Moab had heard that all the kings had come up to wage war against them, and they called for anybody who could put on a belt, and older than that, they stood on their border, they got everyone there, they got up early in the morning, and the sun shone upon the water. Moab saw opposite them that the water was red like blood, that the sun shining upon the water, somehow maybe it was a red sun.
The dirt is red over there.
Maybe it was that. Look at the wording. Look at the wording. It says, Shemesh Zorch al Amayim. Shone on the water. Maybe with the dirt plus the sun. It sounds like it was a red sun. And that does happen. But the water that was down there, somehow it affected it. They said, oh, this blood is the swords of the Jews and the Adomim against each other. B'nai Yisrael must have fought against B'nai Adom, and the B'nai Adom fought against Yoshaphat, and they all fought each other, and they're all dead. And now, the whole area, that's not water down there. There's no water in that Nachal. It's all blood. They filled up the valley filled with blood. That's what they saw it as. The king of Machne Yisrael, but they came in, like, loose, you know? They didn't have their weapons on. They didn't have anything there. That Kumu Yisrael, the Yaakov's Moab. The Jews got up, and they destroyed them. They ran away from them by Yaakov, the Yaakov's Moab. They literally started hitting and kept hitting all of Moab, and they could not stop what they were doing over here. They had gotten them completely. What? That it was blood?
Yeah.
Apparently, the Moabim were completely there.
There's no water. It's the desert. It's going to be a pool of something. It's going to be a pool of blood.
Yeah. And they came in so completely confident.
Coincidentally, goes into the same exact area.
There's a lot of bodies.
A pool. A river filled with blood.
I don't know what they saw. I don't know what they saw. They didn't see a river. They saw an area that was filled with blood. They must have said.
There was a war zone over there. They fought each other in there. They didn't kill each other.
You might have thought maybe there was a little pond in the bottom. It got bloody. Who knows? Who knows? But that's what they ended up seeing. Now, Arim Ya'arosu, the cities they did destroy. So all the good fields, each man threw stones in there, and they filled it up so that you couldn't plant anything there. Right? The Kolmai and Mayim Yistomu, they closed up all the springs of water, and they knocked down all the trees. Until there remained only the stones of the wall of the city of Haroshes. Right? And all the Kaloyim, they're these guys, the
archers,
slingshot guys, but here in a bigger way, they're like the catapults. They surrounded it by Yaku and they were able to destroy it. So they destroyed every single city. The only one left was the Haroshes. This is the name of an area that was surrounded by a huge clay wall. The king of Moab saw that the war is really bad, that it was really strongly against him. He took with him 700 men who were carrying swords in order to break their way way through to the king of Edom. He figured, okay, I won't be able to kill the Jews, at least I'll be able to kill the king of Edom. Maybe I'll be able to go down to their land. If they're destroying my land, maybe I'll go down to that. Below Yaholu. But he wasn't able to. Okay, so that's that. Some say he wanted to throw all the people into confusion that one of the kings was dead. Some say he was the weakest of the three armies. Others say he was the closest of the three armies. Another say that he had a particular hatred for the king of Edom. Nonetheless, others said that it wasn't even trying to go up against the king of Edom. He tried to convince the king of Edom to join his side and fight against the Jews. He figured he couldn't win on his own right now, but maybe if he convinces Edom to fight with him, maybe then they'll be able to win, and that was what they were trying to do. Says in Pasukhov Zayin, Vayikach has been over Chorasher Yimloch Tachtov, he took his oldest son that would become king after him, Vayaleu Ola Alachoma, and he brought him up as a Korban Ola on the wall. Vayiketzav Gadol Yisrael, there was a great anger upon Bnei Yisrael, Vayisum Vayalav Vayashub La'aretz, and they went upon him, right, and they returned to the land itself. Now, look at this. This is absolutely unbelievable. This man, his name was Mesha, the king of Moab. Now, this is mentioned in Tainus. If anybody's on Tainus in the first park, it says there were three things that God never asked for. He never asked for Avram Avinu to really sacrifice his child. Never really wanted Yitzchak Avinu to die. He never wanted Mesha to kill his son, and he never wanted Yiftach to sacrifice his daughter. Now, what happened with Mesha Melech Moab? Mesha Melech Moab overheard what was going on, that the Jews were winning, and he said, what is the greatness of the Jews? What do the Jews have that's so special, right, that make them win, that make them have this power? And they told him, Avram Avinu, their great-great-grandfather, went through a bunch of nisyonos. They went through a bunch of things that he did, and that was that. Remember, by the way, Moab comes from who?
Lot.
From Lot. So Lot, Avram's brother, was different. They said, let's go all the way back. So he said, Avram Avinu was a great man, and that's what they ended up doing. He said, well, what did Avram do that was so great? And they told him the greatest act that Avram Avinu ever did was the Akedah. So what happened to Akedah? They told him that at the end he stopped and he didn't sacrifice his kid. So he said, I'll do even better. I'll actually sacrifice my kid. I'll take my kid and I'll actually sacrifice and I'll show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I'm on his side greater than Avram Avinu was. That Avram Avinu was willing to sacrifice but didn't do it, I'll actually sacrifice my kid to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to show him how much I'm for there, and that's that. Yirmiyahu said it was the foolishness of Mesha Melech Moab that should have killed him. Nonetheless, it caused the kitrug on Klal Yisrael. What was the accusation on Klal Yisrael? The kitrug is that he was willing to sacrifice to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, while the Jews were still worshipping some form of pagan Avodah Zarah while they believed in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Hashem said, this guy figured out that I'm the one and only God. And you guys can't figure that out, and that caused the accusation, and thus Mesha's army was not totally destroyed. Although they should have been able to destroy him, something happened that allowed him to be able to come, and that was that.
So the Nebuah technically didn't come true.
Which Nebuah? Which
the one that Elijah just said. That
he didn't say this. He said, this is what you should do. He didn't say this is what's going to be. To go and destroy the nation. They have that choice. If they did it, it would be a good time to be able to do it. Some say that it was not the king of Moab's son, that the king of Moab sacrificed the king of Edom's son, that he burned the king of Edom. He had already captured him in war, and then he burned his body right over there.
It's like he's taking somebody, his enemy's son.
According to that, that clearly was not a real korban. No, he was just, you know, he was trying to get around.
But he's still,
right? And then when
he's sending a korban to Hashem.
But the wording is, but look at the wording of the pasuk again. By Yiketzav Gadol Al Yisrael, there was a great anger on the Jews. Was not from Hashem. It was a great anger from the king of Edom on the Jews for getting involved in this war and losing his son. By Yisumei Olav is that Edom traveled away from the rest of Bnei Yisrael. They returned to the land. They no longer wanted to be there. They were so angry about that he refused to fight anymore. That's the idea behind it. That's where that is. That's where he goes from.
Sacrifices Yavi Usher. So like, how is that?
There's no question that it's Usher, and I think we understand that. The idea isn't what they wanted to do.
How can you get a claim against Klal Yisrael by doing something like that? It seems like that would be.
We have to understand what Moloch was. Moloch was had a pull to it. It had some type of a desire that people liked, and the reason why people liked it was simple. I mean, it was a true desire. They looked at him and they said, "Oh, it's like the Akedah Plus. And their idea was the following. It really was a brilliant idea. By the Akedah, why didn't Avraham Avinu sacrifice his kid at the end of the day? Because the Malach came down from Shemayim and said, don't sacrifice this kid. This kid is worth living. You should do the same. And if your kid is worth living, then God will stop you. And if the kid's not worth living, then God won't stop you. And it's okay. Your kid died, but he was supposed to die anyway. Their line was, you'll do what Avraham Avinu did. Yeah, it is good for population growth, but you'll do what Avraham Avinu did, right? And you'll sacrifice your kid, right? And you'll either get the message from the Malach, or you won't. Or you're one of the two. Right? And that was their line. And the people fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. They knew that Avraham Avinu was a great man. They realized how great this was. They understood.
Did anybody ever say, like, in the middle, like, oh, wait, God just spoke to me. My son doesn't
I think it would have to be a public thing, but no. We don't know too many people that gave to Moloch. We know about Chizkiyahu HaMelech, that he was given over to Moloch, but he survived because his mother gave him the salamander blood or whatever it was that made him impervious to fire, you know, put asbestos all over his body. So he was cancerous, but he was impervious to fire. But that's the Midrash. Other than him, I don't know anyone else who was sent to Moloch.
Because they're all grown up and died.
Well, we don't know any parents that did it. We don't know anybody that actually did it. So that's the reason why. So we only have that one Maisa, and that's that. But you're right, obviously, because they died. The Isha Achas. Now we have Perek Dalet over here. The Isha Achas is Menashe B'nei Anavim. So one of the women, right, from the wives of the sons of the prophets. So Akka Elisha, she cried out to Elisha Lamar, saying, Avdecha Ishi Mace, your servant, my husband, died. You know that he was your servant. Yoreh Hashem, he feared God. And now the creditor, the one who is, you know, who was given all of our money, who lent us a lot of money, he's coming to take my two children as slaves. He's going to take my two children as slaves, and that was that. Now, who was this guy? Who was the Navi that he's referring to? Ovadia. Now, Ovadia, remember, had saved 100 Nevi'im and sent them in two different caves, 15 in one cave, 15 in another cave. He was sending them meat from Achav's palace every day, and we said that Achav might have even known about this. It's very hard to hide 100 portions of meat that you're sending out to other people. But Ovadia was a shochet, right? He was one of the shochetim of Achav's palace.
One of the wealthiest people ever, so...
Ovadia?
Achav.
Achav was extremely wealthy.
Okay.
You're right. It's possible that he didn't know about it.
So like, oh, they killed extra 15 cows today.
It is a little weird, though. So eventually Achav did find out about it, and Achav was okay with it. But in the end, Ovadia was not able to support all the chacham all the time. He had to start borrowing money. And he borrowed money after money after money, and eventually he wasn't able to pay back, and then he died. His wife was then left with a ton of debts of paying for those Nevi'im, right? And she had two kids. The creditor said, give me the two kids to sell as slaves, and then you'll pay back your loans. Everything will be there. In other words, I'll take everything from you.
I'm not sure that was crushing, because when do kids become indentured for their father's death?
Obviously not normally, but this was what happened over here. We're going to go to a little bit later, why didn't Elisha, who was clearly friends with Yehoshaphat and with the king of Israel, with Yehoram, why didn't he go straight to the king? So we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Yehoram is the creditor.
Yehoram was a creditor. Rashi brings that down. You are correct. I have it right over here. It was Yehoram that he had turned to be able to take it. He was the one who gave the ribbis. That's right over there. Very, very good. He was the one that did it right over there. Where are we over here? Unfortunately, it's because of all this. There were other sins around here. Obadiah's wife cried out 265 times, but she received no answer. So she eventually went to the cemetery. I don't know what the mile of 265 is. I don't know where that comes from. But she went to the cemetery. She went to her husband's grave, to Obadiah's grave. And she said, Yirei Hashem, Yirei Hashem, oh God fearing one, oh God fearing one. 365 maybe. But she, God fearing one, God fearing one. It's 265.
Wait. 248?
Yeah, it's not going to work. But over here, she said, a voice answered. It said, which God fearing one do you mean? There are four people who are called Yirei Hashem. Avram, Yosef, Eov, and Ovadia. Which one do you want? She said, I'll go with Ovadia. I want my husband, right? She knelt down to the grave and said, what do I do? What do I do? So Ovadia said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised me, leave your orphans, I will support them, your widows can rely on me. Okay, that's what Ovadia said. So the orphans cried out and says, take us, O Father, take us, we don't want to be slaves. In other words, let us die now. She answered, go to Elisha with the little oil you have left and let him bless you. So the woman went straight to Elisha with her oil, and that's how she understood she had to go to Elisha. But Elisha said to her, Ma'atzalach, what can I do for you? Hagidili Ma'yeshlach. tell me what you have, Babayis, in your house. There is nothing that your servant, that your maidservant has in the house except for a flask of oil. In other words, Elisha said, in order for me to bless you, to give you a bracha of something, I need to have something for the bracha to be chal on. Is there anything for my bracha to be chal on? In other words, by Eliyahu Hanavi, remember when he went to visit that the woman's house, Yonah's mother, where he said, your bread and your wine will never let up. Meaning, if you have bread and wine right now, that'll be oil. Yeah, that's right. That will never run out. And as long as you keep taking, you'll find bread in the basket, you'll find oil in the jug, and you'll always have it. You need something for the bracha to be chal on. So what do you have? Similar like what the Baba Sali used to do. Lahavdil, because he's a Nevi'im, and that was the Baba Sali. But the Baba Sali pouring the arak for everyone in the room, which is documented and seen by thousands of people. We used to pour for every single person in the room from one bottle of arak to every single person. If there's something there, right, then bracha can be chal, and you're allowed to pour more and more and more. But if there's nothing there, there's nothing you can do. That's that. This woman, by the way, the oil that she was talking about was not even for, it wasn't consumable oil. It was rub-on oil. It was like she had a bottle of deodorant. That's what she had. She didn't have regular oil that you can use for food. She only had a little bit of oil that she had in the bottle of a deodorant can that she used for bathing. That's all she had left from everything that she had. But Elisha said, that's perfectly fine. A small amount can do something. So let's do it. Bayomer, lechi shali loch kelim. Go, borrow for yourself kelim, vessels. Minachut, from other people, may it call shchein nochi, from all shchein noyich, I'm sorry, from all of your neighbors. Kelim reikim, you should do empty kelim al tamidi, and do not, you know, don't go cheap. Don't skimp on the barrels. Take as many as you possibly can. Ubas, I want you to go and I want you to close the door upon you, and on your children. Right, and then you're going to pour into all these kalim, right, and the full ones I want you to take away. Okay, so that's what he said over here. So now, over here, he said that the Isha Tzarfatit had a tremendous amount of self-sacrifice and hospitality in what she was able to give me, and then because of that, this schus, she was willing to have tremendous miracles happen to her. This woman, on the other hand, was not going to be having that type of a miracle where there was just going to be enough food and enough drink for whatever they needed, or enough money or whatever it is. Instead, she's going to have to do something in order to get the money. You're going to have to pour out the oil, and you're going to have to do work in order for the oil to come out. I'm assuming, by the way, that this was hard work. I've never poured oil from one barrel to the other, but I'm assuming this wasn't.
So just like that.
You're right. Still, nonetheless, keeping this held like that for that long probably tired out your arm after a while. She kept going, so maybe she did, maybe, but it was still work. In other words, it was still work involved, and you had to sell the oil afterward. Oil is not worth anything unless you sell it afterward. What are you going to do with a ton of oil? So why did it have to be a mace this way? It was a limited mace because of that. He also said that once you stop pouring, it's done. It's over. You don't have the squeeze that other people have. It's not going to happen anymore. I'm sorry? We don't know, but she just didn't have the schus to have such a huge miracle. It's just the opposite.
It sounds interesting based on the wording. It kind of sounds like she had to borrow them, that you couldn't, like, she had barrels lying around, she couldn't use them.
100%. I would assume that there were some barrels around, but they wanted as many as possible, and that's the idea.
No, but it sounds like you have to go borrow from other people.
No, because specifically, what did her husband do? Her husband borrowed with ribbis, with interest, and thus her son were going to be taken because of it. You're not only allowed, you're not allowed to lend with ribbis, but you're not allowed to borrow with ribbis either. He felt there was no choice and he had to do it in order to save this many chalim. Nonetheless, that was a sin. So the sin is rectified by him borrowing the kalim right now. I agree, but nonetheless, on his level, that's still it happened to a chayt. Just remember, whenever something happens to a chayt, even though it's mutter, still something was wrong that it had to happen, thank you, in that way. Why happened that way? Why couldn't it have been that you found a free gemach somewhere that lent you the money? You know what I'm saying? Like, why wasn't it that way? The fact that there was ribbons involved meant that there was something just a little bit wrong. Yeah.
Why? I understand. Why did he have to why didn't he just down to the check?
He probably did, and it didn't come.
So then maybe the answer is no. Like, don't send the money.
You don't not save people because a Kaddish Baruch Hu doesn't send you a miracle.
You sure?
You want it to 100 people? No, you save people anyway.
But you're
diving for a miracle. If you don't get it, then you do it. You have to do something.
You're saying that you're not going after borrowing with interest. He couldn't borrow any other way.
So he probably mottered it in some way for himself, saying, in order to save a life, it's mutter for me to take interest.
Seems like she
punished for his transgression.
No, she needs to do a tikkun for his transgression. Now, that's a difference. In other words, you're doing this for Ovadia. So there is something here that could be something. That we don't know. That we don't know. We don't know what he could have done wrong. But nonetheless, he did do something. He did lend, borrow with Rivas. And that is wrong, even if he had a hetzer for it. Maybe at his level, he shouldn't have done so. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know. But at the end of the day, no one else is allowed to see this miracle. They have to close the door opposite them so that no one else could see it. Hey, by Caleb Mito, she went from the Matisko Adelos Bado. She closed the door by her Abanav by her children. Hey, Magisha Melad, Emo Tsukas. Correct. Hey, Magisha Melad, they brought her the Caleb, and she started pouring. Rika Melosa Caleb, and the Caleb were filled up. I told her, Banal, Gisha, Eli, Oid Kelly. She said to her son, bring me another cleave. I am Rela, ain't Oid Kelly. There is no other one. By Amor Shaman, and at that moment, the oil stopped going. She went and she told the man of God what happened over here. Right, that's what happened. By Yomer, go sell the oil. And go pay back your creditors. And you and your children will be able to live from the rest of what it was supposed to be. And that's the idea. That's what we said before. She still had to pay. It wasn't like it was an easy thing altogether. Right? She was worried about something simple. That much oil going out of the market at the same time. What does that do to the market fluctuation? It's obviously going to decrease the price of the amount of money that people are going to pay for oil. So she was afraid and she went to Elisha. Why'd she go to Elisha? She knew what to do with the oil. Go sell the oil. She went to Elisha. She said to Elisha, if I sell the oil all together at once, I'm going to lose a ton of money over here. What do I do? To which Elisha said, you're going to see that in the market, there's going to be a tremendous demand for oil right now. Go to the market, you'll see that all your oil will sell at not only a regular price, but a tremendous price. She not only did it remain stable, went above, she was able to pay back all her debts, and she was able to live off the rest for the rest of her life. And that was all there. Yeah?
There was a lot of oil.
It was pretty good oil. But yeah, yo, who was on that Debbie? Abba Elisha Shunem. Now, he went to the city called Shunem. Shom Isha Gedola, there was a large woman there, but it doesn't mean large. It really means she was a great woman. Batakavit Bo Echolechem. She took hold of him to eat bread. Now, literally, it does seem that she literally grabbed him. Clearly, that's not the case, because nobody would do that, not to Elisha, not to the Navi. But it could be that they grabbed onto the feet. It was normal for the people to go down to the feet of the Nevi'im back then. It could be that she held onto the feet of Elisha and said, don't go anywhere, we want you to stay by our house. That's possible, yeah.
She says, the sister brings down, it's the sister of Avishag HaShunamis.
Yeah, that's the famous line, that the Isha HaShunamis over here is the sister of Avishag.
Maybe it means a niece, great, great niece or something.
We know she was old, because she wasn't able to have kids, but you're right, this would have been a long time. Yeah, 120 years at least. At least. By Yimi De Avro, Yosser Shamalech Olechem. And it was, as he was passing by there, right, whenever he passed through there, he went there to eat bread, meaning the Isha Shunamis was the place that he stayed, and that was that. Now, Chazal say, if you're not going to get hanal from people, don't get hanal like Shmuel HaNavi. Shmuel HaNavi would not take anything from anyone. Wherever he went, he brought his house with him, and he didn't take anything from anybody. The Lisha HaNavi did take, but he didn't take extras. He only took exactly what that person would offer. He would never say, like, you have an extra chocolate mint. He would never ask for doubles. Whatever they put on the table, that he would eat, and he would eat nothing else. He allowed them to get the mitzvah of feeding a Talmud Chacham. That's what he would do. But he would not take more than just that. So if you're going to get hanal from other people, says the Gemara, take hanal the way that he did it over here. And by the way, as a side note, right, some say that the child that this mother was going to have later on was Edo. Edo, the famous Navi that we'll see, right? Others say it was Edo's wife. But Tomer Elisha, she said to her husband, yeah.
She has a son?
The son is, we don't know who the son is, according to that opinion. But we're going to see that she has a son.
No, so Edo's wife?
It's either Edo's wife, and they had a kid, or it's Edo, the child that was brought back to life. But Tomer Elisha, she said to her husband, I know that this man is a very holy person. The Gemara says, how did she know? So either, number one, he had an unbelievable reputation. Number two, his miracles were now publicized throughout the land. That, to me, makes the most sense. That everybody knew about his miracles. Number three, she never saw a fly at his table. A fly was never around him. And back then, I imagine that's the greatest miracle of all. I can't imagine that. That is correct. And number four, that his bed was always clean in the morning, meaning there was no zera levatala. He didn't have any bad dreams.
Did you, like, check in for that every morning?
No, but she cleaned the sheets. So you would notice stained sheets were, I'm sure, common, right? I would assume that's out there. But either way, it also had the fragrance of Gan Eden, says the Medrash. So I know that this guy is Kadosh. Overland with Talmud, and he comes by us all the time. Nathan Aliyah Kir Katana. No, by the way, as a side note, I don't know why Elisha was traveling. I don't know where he was going. Why he was going from one place to the other. Maybe it was like Shmuel and Avi that he was going to judge the people all the way around. Maybe he was a guy who was, you know, prophesying in different places. But we have no information on why Elisha kept traveling from one place to the other and didn't just stay in one place like Shmuel and Avi seemed to. Toward the end of his life. Maybe it was like that. I don't know. Elio and Avi also traveled all the time. I'm not so sure why that was necessary.
Well, they didn't travel so much. It was much easier for one person to go from city to city than for everybody to go looking around for the...
I hear you saying. So then it's basically he's giving Musar and giving Nevuos to people by going around from town to town. It's interesting. Can you imagine that Gadol HaDor went around as opposed to being taught? But I guess, yeah.
Stories in Europe with the rabbi going in his wagon driver and they're going from town to town.
Only Baal Shem Tov stories. That was with Alexei the wagon driver. I don't know. Alexei the wagon driver must have been a great guy. But anyway, he says, Nasa no Aliyas Kir Katana. Let's make a little extra room. Some say it was a rooftop room. Some say it was an extra room to the side. Nasa lo Shem Mita Vesholchem Vekiseo Menorah. We'll put there a bed and a table and a chair and a candelabra. What else do you need in life, huh? Man, I don't need much else. TV. Why the Bowe Lenu Yosser Shama?
Was there in those days that they could,
I don't, yeah, they didn't have the big screens. I know. I hear you. Whenever he comes to us, then he'll go there. He'll be able to go there and he'll be able to hand out. Now, notice something very quickly, by the way. No place for Gehazi. Gehazi traveled with Elisha wherever he went, but she was not offering a place for Gehazi to stay. I just want to point that out. But was that day, he came there, and he turned to the Aliyah, and he slept there. And he said to Gehazi, is Nar. Call this Shunammis Azos. Call this Shunammis woman. And he called her. And she stood in front of him. It could be that it wasn't Prius for Elisha to call out to him. It could be, right, that he wasn't, you know, he didn't know where she was. Maybe she had left somewhere or whatever. So he said, just go get her so I can speak to her before I leave. But Yomelo, and he said to him, Emor Nai Leha, say to her, please, right, you've gone through all this, you know, great respect. You've done crazy things for us over here. Mala Soslach, what can we do for you? Is there what to speak of to you to the king? Because we're close to the king. To the general, listen, I live within my people. I have nothing that I need, right? When it comes to, like, you know, government type of stuff and anything like that, that's what he said. Now, number one, why was he speaking to Gehazi over here? So there are opinions that say that the woman couldn't bear to look at his face. If you didn't learn Torah, you couldn't see Elisha's face. Now, that's obviously a Kabbalistic type answer. I don't fully get it, but women were not able to see his face. You should know, by the way, the Bir Yaakov, Baba Sali's grandfather, never allowed a woman to be in the same room with him that wasn't his rabbanit, that wasn't his wife. There was one time where he stayed in a person's house and he was davening Shmon Esrei, and the lady of the household who did all this stuff for him and made all these meals really badly wanted to see the Abir Yaakov's face. She had never seen it. So they said, while he's davening Shmon Esrei, you can come in, and they let him come in. When she came in, the story is brought down by the Abir Yaakov book, the Abir Yaakov immediately stopped his Shmon Esrei and said, did a woman see me? When he heard yes, he immediately left the house and wouldn't come back ever again. I don't know. This is obviously something that's way beyond normal human beings. It's not something that's normal, because even great Mekubalim nowadays, some people that are around, they obviously not only allow women to see them, but they appear to see women as well. It's not like it's something that's evil. So I don't know what it is exactly, but Abir Yaakov was makbid gummer that no woman should ever see his face. So maybe that's what we're learning from Elisha over here. I don't know. Yeah, literally to each his own, because that's not something that I think anybody would be able to tell other people. That's number one. You know that the famous the stipler would not read handwriting written by a woman? The stipler? Ruchaim does this as well. Ruchaim's able to read handwriting. The stipler, whenever a note would come to him that was written by a woman, he wouldn't read it. And that's, again, I don't know. These are things that we just have no idea. But it was well known that the stipler would do it, and you couldn't fool him. If a man would hand him the sheet, he would know immediately if a woman wrote it, and he wouldn't look at it.
You can tell handwriting's a man or a woman.
Usually, because it's like really neat and whatever it is.
You can for sure tell if it's a man.
Because the eyes are all dotted with hearts. I don't think so. That's kind of, you know, anyway. I hear what you're saying. Maybe, but there obviously are women that are not that way. There are obviously men that are not that way.
You know why Elisha toured the country? Because there's so much of what's going on. If you had him in one place.
Oh, that's a good call. You wanted to go around. That's a good call. You wanted to make sure that everybody here. That's a good call to be able to go back there. Anyway, that's that. Another answer is just a simple answer. He had already left the house. And he sent Gehazi back and said, you know what, we should reward her. So he sent Gehazi back to ask, what did she need? Okay, so that's that. So what happened?
I didn't think it would be like this. He's in the middle of learning, doing whatever he's doing, and Gehazi, you're my gabbai.
Go check it out. I mean, I guess so. It is weird that he didn't, you know, do it. But either way, regardless, is that. Some say that this is on Rosh Hashanah, that this is right before or on Rosh Hashanah itself, and that's when he thought that these prayers would be answered specifically, and that's the reason why. Which he said, don't worry, I daven bisochom on Yoshavet. I daven together with a tzibur. If you daven with a tzibur on Rosh Hashanah, your tefillahs are always going to be answered. And that's what he said. I'm sorry? Not the same type of tefillah, but they certainly had something on Rosh Hashanah. What it was, though, they had to have something. Yeah, that's what I mean. She was with them. That's a great little... Yeah, it's a vort. It is a vort. And by the way, that's what he said. I'm with the king. I'm in with the king. Like, I'm Rosh Hashanah time. You know what I'm saying?
The king in this case, God.
Is that Kaddish Baruch Hu? That's exactly it. I'm sorry? Oh, I don't know what that refers to. Maybe Satan? Malach HaMavet? Right, Malach HaMavet and Hashem. That works so well. I will tell you, by the way, that what happened, and we said this before. So, if he had this in with the king, why did he do that for Obadiah's wife? If he knew the king...
The king was a creditor.
Just go up to Yehoram. So that could be a very good answer. If Yehoram is a creditor, that's a good answer. He gave another answer. The man always gives another answer and says, the reason why is because it was only as a result of the previous miracle that happened with the oil that he had gained the respect of the kings around. Yeah, I guess this was more public than the other things, and maybe that's the reason why. So maybe that's what happened over here. So, Pasuk Yudalev, Vayomer Umala Soslo. So what should I do for her? Gehazi said, you should know. Avol, I know it means but. Over here it doesn't mean but. Avol is, it's the truth. She doesn't have a child. The Isha's a thing. Her husband's really old.
But she's saying, I don't need anything. Thank you. But I don't have a son.
Well, Gehazi is saying it to Elisha. So it is weird wording. It's weird. It could be. And he translates it that way. He translates it as, but she has no son. But Avol does mean the truth is, right, that she has no son. Her husband is old. We have a Karala. So he said to her, to call her again. That's the way Avol usually is translated. I don't know why people do that. But either way, Vayikola, you called to her. Now she stood at the door. So now it was literally in front of Elisha. At this time next year, you're going to be holding on to a son. The same Lushan that was used for Sari Meno. And maybe that's the drush that they say was Rosh Hashanah, because the Lushan is that Sari was Nipkida on Rosh Hashanah. Maybe it's the same thing over here. But I told her, Alav, and he, please don't, Ishalohim, the man of God, don't lie to your maidservant. Now, this woman must have known.
It means to lie or to make me
deny, to fool, whatever it is.
Yeah, to make me disappointed.
Kozev, Kozevet is to lie. Kozevet usually is to lie. What's the wording over there in Targum?
No,
you have
like
it.
In Hebrew, you say Asravah.
Well, what does it say, though? What does it say in the Targum? I'm pretty sure it is a lie.
Lie Yitzkadev, Yitzkadev.
Okay, that doesn't. Yitzkadev. Same thing as Kazev. It's probably going to be lie. But I hear it.
Hebrew is funny.
Like a joke. A disappointment. That's a good call. Okay, that's a good one. I like that. I like that line.
I'll start any devarshi so kish beartha levaki rafni vinati li bein af levaki shani rafni li ela bein to kayama.
Okay, you want an eventual man.
Yeah, don't think in the...
At that moment, he had that Ruach HaKodesh, by the way, and that's that. It is...
So that's miracle number 5.
Yeah, and this is going to be miracle number 6. Number 6, right? Because number 5 was the oil. It is weird, though. She said, I don't want a bracha that's going to give me temporary pleasure, but then going to be something bad in the end. In other words, you're promising me a son, so I at least going to have like 2 or 3 years of a son or whatever. She said, I don't want that. That's not what I want. I don't want a kid for 2 or 3 years, and for that, I want somebody who's going to grow into adulthood. So don't give me that type of a child. That's what he's trying to say. She'll get pregnant, she'll give birth to a son. Exactly at that time the next year. I should give you a lot of Elisha that Elisha had said, the child grew up, it was a certain day, he went out to his father, to the ones who were reaping. Now, reaping season in Eretz Yisrael is a hot time. It's warm outside. He said to his father, Roshi, Roshi, my head, my head. He said to his servants, carry him into his mother. He had heat stroke. Simply put, he had heat stroke. So he was dehydrated and he was dying. But he said, carried him and brought him over to his mother. She held him on her legs until the evening, and he died toward the afternoon or whatever it is, and he died right then. Now, this is not he went into a coma. This is clearly he died.
Doesn't the Rambam say he was in a coma?
I think that was regarding Yonah, that they say about Eliyahu Hanavi. Over here it says straight up Yamos. Yeah.
What is it over there?
I don't remember, but I don't think it says that. I think it says something like he was lying on the ground or whatever, something like that.
Right.
No, this is the Roshi Roshi.
It says it here?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I don't remember what it says over there, but if you could check it out, that would be great. It's the end of Melach Malach. So days of Gimel. She went up. She lied down the child on the bed of the Isha Elokim. She closed the door and then she left. So what are you going to say?
What's the thing? We had the same thing by Abraham and Sarah that it's a year from now. It's not like it's going to be 9 months from now or 10 months from now. It's exactly a year from now. You're going to.
Well, if you think about it, I don't want to be graphic, but normally if a person goes into Nida, right, like right at that moment, if this woman was really old, she needed to get into Nida in order for her to become available to have a child within a year. So, in other words, you have to have a real Nida cycle. You can't just have one Nida cycle and then it works. Of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can do anything, but in theory, you really need 2 months
to make
start a real Nida cycle available, and then 10 months. In theory, normally that's not going to work unless you have a full cycle that's going to work, and then at the end of that cycle, this is when you find out. So, in theory, you can get like 10 months that way, that's 11 months. That's number one. But number two, it might not be that it's referring to a year from now. I'm saying it that way, but the Gemara really says it was from one Moed to the other. Meaning, this happened on Sukkot, and it was a leap year, and she gave birth to a child 7 months later. That's what happened on Pesach, 6.5 months later, whatever it is. So maybe that's what happened over here as well.
I'm saying Avraham and Sarah was exactly a year later.
No, no, that's what the Gemara says about Metzia, right? That it was 6 months, or 7 months later altogether.
No.
It says, Vatikra Elisha, she called out to her husband, let's tell her, Shulchan Ali, Echad Mina Aram, give me one of the young men. Bakasat Stone is one of the donkeys. I want to run to the man of God and I want to come back. Why are you going? A love I came today. Lo Chodesh Lo Shabbos, not Rosh Chodesh, not Shabbos, which means that on Rosh Chodesh or Shabbos, they used to visit their Rebbe. And that is the halacha that you visit your Rebbe on Rosh Chodesh or on a Yom Tov. Right? I told her Shalom. She said, Shalom, everything's okay. Don't worry about it. Everything's going to be okay. I don't know why you didn't put two and two together. Your son just said heat stroke and ran back, and all of a sudden she's like, I've got to run to the Navi right now. Right? Why would he not put two and two together? But apparently he didn't, or
I don't think
he trusted her. Yeah, he must have trusted her. I don't know why. People die from sunstroke all the time.
No, but I'm thinking more of like, he's dead, what's the Navi going to do? Like, you can't expect.
I guess so. Why would he go? Yeah. By Takavoshawathstone, she saddled the donkey. By Tomo Hour, she said to her young lad, Nahag Balech, drive and go. I'll talk to her, leave. Don't wait for me. Lirkov, Ki'im Amarti Lach, until I tell you to. By Tavavatavol Yishalahim, she went and she came all the way to the man of God, Alhara Kamel to Hara Kamel, but Yikaros Yishalahim also. Me Neged, when the man of God saw her opposite, by Yomar Gechazin Aro, he named Shinamis Alaz. Is that the Shinamis woman? Ata Ruk, Rutsna Lirkrosa, go run and greet her. Amorla Hashalom Lach, Hashalom Lishek. Is everything okay with you? Everything okay with your husband? Hashalom Yolid, is everything okay with your child? That's Omer Shalom. Said Shalom. For some reason, he had been held back from why she had been visiting. He said, like, find out what's going on over here. Tavol Yishalahim, she didn't want to say a thing to Gechaz. What's up?
Until he had no brother.
There you go. That's the line that they say.
Right, but it says afterwards, I'm sorry, she says,
Yeah, but that's the line. See, that's where the Rambam gets it. I don't even remember where the Rambam says it. But I don't remember exactly where he says it. It is a weird Mori Nevuchim, but not here. Here it's not that way.
Yeah,
but there's no question it's still a form of Tchias HaMeisim in a way. And there's no question, even if he wasn't fully dead, it was a way of Tchias HaMeisim. No, because that wouldn't have taken a guy out of a coma. It was some form of Tchias HaMeisim. Just maybe not the Tchias HaMeisim of fully dead. But this, without a question, was a fully dead child. Batikra Elisha, she called out, I'm sorry. Batobol Elisha Elihim Elahor. Batatav Raglav, she grabbed onto his feet. This is the second time that we've seen her do this. Bayigash Gehazi Ladfah. Gehazi came to push her away. Chazal tell us that this shows Gehazi's rishus. He pushed her away and specifically touched her in the chest when he pushed her away. Bayomer Isha Elohim Harpe Lo. The man of God said, let her go. She's very bitter. Hashem helling me many below Higidli. Hashem has hidden this from me and won't tell me what it is. She said, have I asked for a child from my master? I said, said, don't mislead me. So go gird your loins and take my staff on your hands and go. If you find a man in the street, don't say hello to him. When a guy says hello to you, don't answer him. And put my staff on the face of the nar. She said, Amanar, the mother of the child, said, by the life of God and the life of your soul, I'm not leaving you. She said to Elisha, I don't care what Gehazi is doing. I'm not going with Gehazi. I only want you to be able to take this child. Give me a second. He got up and he went after her. Gehazi went in front of him. He put the staff on the face of the kid. There was no noise. There was no, nothing happened. She went back to greet him. And he said to Elisha, listen, the kid never got up. We have to understand something. There's a lot to this. And this is not a simple idea over here. Number one, the staff of Elisha. Elisha didn't use it later on. You notice, Elisha, the way he's going to revive the child is by going onto the body of the child. He does not use the staff to wake up the child. In fact, we don't see the staff used anywhere for anything like this. So why in the world is it like this? So the fact is like this. It's a chassam sofer, and it's an amazing chassam sofer. It's in Shilas Vichufas in Orach Chaim, around Kuf Pei something or other. He says the following. He said there are two ways for miracles to happen. Two ways. You can either have it through Torah, or you can have it through Tefillah. Elisha's miracles all happened through Tefillah. He davened, and something happened. He asked the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and something happened. He never had it through Torah, which means, what does it mean through Torah? By using the Shemos of a Kadosh Baruch Hu.
Well, we discussed that already anyways. When Elisha asked Eliyahu what he wanted.
Yeah, he wanted to double the amount. Right? But we didn't say through Tefillah versus Torah.
Okay.
Eliyahu also had the awesome through Tefillah,
splitting the river.
Nonetheless, but the shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu?
No, he tried to split and he said to God.
Oh, what happened to it? Exactly. He had to dive into HaKadosh Baruch Hu in order to be able to split. It's a very, very good call, actually. Elisha's staff represented the shameless of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a Ben Yishkai on that. We can talk about it. It's in Gittin, in Samach Zion, regarding Shlomo Melech. And when Shlomo Melech was kicked out of his kingdom by Hashemadai, king of the demons, he had one thing left with him, either his shirt or his staff. And the Ben Yishkai says, the power of a Chacham is the shameless HaKadosha that are in the staff. It's an amazing Ben Yishkai. This is the staff that he gave her to Elisha, to Gehazi. He said to Gehazi, I don't know if my tefillah is going to work over here. Because Tzvias a Mason, you need a lot more than just stam whatever. You need shemos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He put the shemos in the staff, gave the staff over to Gehazi, and said to Gehazi, use this through that Torah, this twist of Torah that you have, because Gehazi did learn Torah, you'll be able to revive the kid. The problem was that Gehazi, right, number one, talked to somebody on the way there. He kept going up to people, and they said to him, hey Gehazi, where are you going? He's like, I'm going to do Tzvias a Mason. He thought that he had said, just don't say hello, don't say shalom aleichem, don't say aleichem shalom, but he's like, I can say anything I want. That's one thing. The other thing is that he used it to revive a dead dog. He took it, put it on a dead dog, because he didn't believe that it actually would work. The dead dog came alive and bit him. And then we went down, and he said that it was already all there. But that's that. Others say that the staff was never meant to revive the child. The staff was meant to preserve the child so he didn't start to rot. It was a hot day and he died of sunstroke. There's no air conditioning. He's in a rooftop apartment. It was probably boiling hot. In order to make sure that the body didn't rot, the staff was only to keep his body fresh so that Elisha could then come by and do Tzvias a Mason. We've got more to talk about with this, and we'll talk about Elisha a little bit further. We'll stop at this for right now.